Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So it broke, the news broke at the end of our show yesterday that Trump broke up with Kim Jong-un before he could break up with him.
I know,
But he said that he's still willing to be friends if Jong-un is interested.
Are you sure?
And Jong-un and the Norks said that, hey, they're still willing to meet.
Yeah.
So nothing is over.
Nothing's over.
As it never
there's
is,
like,
really.
There's like heavy petting, like flirting here going on. Like, I want you, but I don't know if you want me. Because apparently, well, according to CNN, which I don't know if you could believe this, and other news media outlets, they're saying that there was a preparation meeting in Singapore, and America was there, but the North Koreans didn't show up.
Yeah, right. No
so
show in Singapore.
They, he broke it off before he could break it off, President Trump.
He's, you know, you have to respect somebody if you're going to be in a relationship with them. And please don't, take that to the heavy petting metaphor ever again. It's disgusting.
Did I make you feel uncomfortable?
Yes.
Am I Morgan Freeman now? Is this what's going on?
We'll get to Morgan Freeman. Trump pulls out saying that it's a setback, but, you know, basically, America's not going to get pushed around and America's not going to get snookered.
North Korea has the opportunity to end decades of poverty and oppression by following the path of denuclearization and joining the community of nations. And I hope that Kim Jong-un will ultimately do what is right, not only for himself, but perhaps most importantly, what's right for his people, who are suffering greatly and needlessly. All of the Korean people, North and South, deserve to be able to live together in harmony, prosperity, and peace. That bright and beautiful future can only happen when the threat of nuclear weapons is removed. No way it can happen otherwise. If and when Kim Jong-un chooses to engage in constructive dialogue and actions, I am waiting. In the meantime, our very strong sanctions, by far the strongest sanctions ever imposed, and maximum pressure campaign will continue as it has been continuing. But no matter what happens and what we do, we will never, ever compromise the safety and security of the United States of America.
I'm waiting. It takes Kim Jong-un forever to get ready. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Did Trump make the right call by canceling the proposed summit next month? Well, take your calls and texts.
A lot of world leaders were caught off guard. I mean, the president of South Korea called for an emergency meeting at midnight, you know, because it was the midnight their time, did not see this coming. And he was just in Washington, D.C. discussing the meeting. So, I don't know. I mean, I feel bad for the people of North Korea because all those reporters are in North Korea right now. They're allegedly blowing up some old nuclear sites. And they said that the people there were disappointed, too, that the meeting's not happening.
Sure. I'm sure that...
Koreans want a better life. Well, they want food.
Well, I'm sure about that, but... But the issue is whether Trump was too euphoric at the outset of the prospects for a good faith negotiation towards denuclearization with Kim Jong-un. And so he's taking some heat. On the one hand, you have sort of the foreign policy establishment suggesting that Trump was right to cancel the summit.
but he was wrong to agree to it so hastily in the first place. I'm not so sure about that, but the Wall Street Journal opined yesterday. Mr. Trump was ill-advised to agree to the summit without much planning. He compounded the error by talking up its prospects. In despite, as you heard the president say, the maximum pressure sanctions campaign will continue. But international consensus will have to be revived, writes the journal. Even without the summit, Kim scored a major propaganda victory by playing the peacemaker. You mentioned the foreign journalists that are there to witness the closure of a North Korean nuclear test site. I think that's a little bit harsh with respect to the president. I actually think that this is another instance where President Trump has leveraged United States power against one of the axis of evil countries, just as he did by walking away from the Iran deal. Victor Davis Hanson points out, lest we forget, North Korea is a stealthy and illegal supplier of ballistic and nuclear weapons technology to Iran. And the unpredictability of Trump and his willingness to walk, I don't want to go all art of the deal on you, but I think canceling the summit was a fine move. I think talking up the prospects prior to yesterday was a fine move. And I think actually he's having his way with Iran and North Korea, and he's reestablishing kind of American, not just exceptionalism, but hegemony in the world, leading from the front, not from behind. And, I just don't see it like the foreign policy establishment sees it with the cancellation.
Well, President Trump thinks Kim Jong-un's tone changed after he had a meeting with the president of China. And then they came out and they called Vice President Trump or Pence a political dummy, which was strange.
Oh, that's it.
No, I mean,
you
was
can
like,
call me whatever you want. You don't pick on Pence.
You don't pick on Pence. But also, too, they talked about, you know, they still are a nuclear stronghold. And that in the letter that President Trump sent to Kim Jong-un, he said, you talk about your nuclear capabilities, but ours are so massive and powerful that I pray to God that we'll never have to be used.
The rogue governments of North Korea and Iran more vulnerable than ever, writes Victor Davis Hanson. I agree with that. And Trump's approach to them has something
forget,
to do with that.
He did get the three American hostages released. I mean, something did come out of this.
Bruno in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know, I see China's hand all over this. I believe China's been using North Korea as a bargaining tool, as a sort of quid pro quo in the trade talks. And most recently, we've started getting harder with China on these trade talks, and it just seems more than coincidental that right after that, right after the meeting between Un and Xi, the North Koreans doing about face. And I also think it's why the United States disinvited the Chinese from the annual RIMPAC military exercises in the Far East, because I think they see China's hands in this.
Well, there's no question, but at the same time, you see some progress being made towards some deals on trade with the Chinese, right? The ZTE, essential bailout in exchange for lowering some trade barriers on U.S. agricultural products. That's a possibility. That's not a done deal yet, but the kind of broad outlines of a possible deal were announced earlier this week, discussed by Larry Kudlow on the Sunday programs. Thanks for the call, Bruno.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
I'm so lonely.
Well, it doesn't
so
have to be
lonely,
that way.
Do you think they'll get back together?
You make a date, you show up to the date, and then you wouldn't be so lonely.
Trump is making him want him more. You know what I mean?
He's playing hard to get a little bit, which is good. You know, make him work for it. Speaking of President Trump, this is a cool story. Jack Johnson, the great heavyweight fighter, received a full pardon yesterday. Obviously, posthumously, he died back in the 40s, but he was, the turn of the century, he was...
He was the bomb.
The dominant fighters of the last 100 years. I think his fight, was it with James Jeffries? Was that 1910, the fight of the century? I think so.
But the problem is he liked white women and he was arrested.
He was prosecuted under the Mann Act for taking his white girlfriend across state lines for quote-unquote immoral purposes. As CNN reports, the Mann Act was purported to be enforced to prevent human trafficking for the purpose of prostitution, but
they abused that law.
Obviously, it was applied inconsistently and in a racist manner. And Jack Johnson actually had to serve a year in prison, and it really ended his boxing career. So it's a tragic story for a great fighter.
Well, why did President Obama pardon him?
That's
Because Sylvester Stallone asked President Trump to do it. He was there yesterday when he was pardoned. And who else was there? Lennox Lewis was there.
Jack Johnson's a great inspiration to me, especially throughout my whole career.
I thought that was pretty cool. He was in the background.
And I'm sure Jack Johnson wouldn't say Lennox Lewis was a great inspiration to him. Not a great heavyweight, Lennox Lewis. Jack Johnson, great heavyweight. Lennox Lewis, mediocre heavyweight. Yeah. But that's
tried
fine.
To emulate him in the boxing.
No, no question. And look, you're right. It is a good question why Obama didn't do it. There's been circulation of letters and petitions for resolutions in Congress to pardon Jack Johnson, and it took President Trump to get it done, even though he's Hitler and a racist. Righting a historic wrong.
That's awesome.
Donald Trump.
Good for him.
Who would have thunk it?
Another tally in the win column.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. Hey, let President Trump do his thing on the world stage. Everybody relax. Let him do his thing. We'll talk about that when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. It's time for me to do my Dan knack.
Dan Knack.
It's a little spin on Karnak, the Magnificent.
Oh!
Dan Knack, the not bad. I wouldn't say magnificent. Monica Youngblood, Jennifer Schwartz-Berkey, and Stephanie Lawson Muhammad. Three political ruling class types who don't like being pulled over by the police.
Exactly.
So we've done Berkey and Muhammad, and we'll reprise those for you.
Because those are classic. Because we want to know which one you like best. 312-642-5600. Who does the drama award go to for best performance while being pulled over by police? The newest one is Monica Youngblood. She's a state rep, a Republican from Albuquerque. She was out drinking Saturday night, although she says she hadn't had anything to drink.
The field sobriety tests say otherwise.
Right. And she got pulled over. She said she just got into a fight with her boyfriend. And then they asked her to perform some tests.
Do you understand all the instructions?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
I'm just cold.
I get it. I wish I could make things different for you, but I can't change the weather. Do you understand the instructions?
Okay. Like I'm supposed to count until you tell me to stop.
Correct. Yes.
So when do you say start?
Do you understand the test?
Yes.
All right, whenever you're ready.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
1,002, 1,003, 1,004, 1,005, 1,006, 1,007, 1,008, 1,009.
Okay.
Yeah, so she got started getting into it.
I don't like the one when they make you do the alphabet backwards. That's hard, even sober. I can't imagine. They didn't make her do that one, but I know people that have had that test done.
Did you ever see the Reno 911 episode where they make you do there's all kind of like gymnastics and tumbling exercises, and the person they pull over nails it. It's pretty funny.
Well, she refused to take to blow into the breathalyzer, and so based on
good idea
her performance. He put her in cuffs and put her in the back of the car, and that's when she let him know what she has done for people of color. And cops.
So many people tell me that you guys treat people like this. I didn't believe it.
I'm not treating you poorly at all.
The water works. There you go.
Well, I can't take you out of handcuffs right now at this very moment just so you can wipe your face.
I don't.
I stick up for you guys, and I say, you know what? They're devoted to me like
she sticks up for them when people say that they're, you know, they treat people badly. She sticks up for them. That's
I literally fight for you guys. I'm the one that runs the death penalty for people who try to kill cops and child murderers.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had another episode.
Remember House Bill 14?
Didn't get it together.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
Honestly, she got pulled over at 1:14. That second video was released. It was taken at 4:44 after she was going through processing. She still could not stop crying. And so she's been charged with a DUI. She says she's going to fight it in court. Well, okay, good luck with that.
That's okay.
And she's looking forward to bringing this matter to a swift and just conclusion.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. That's okay. All right.
It's not as good. Well, you guys decide. 312-642-5600. Who is the best female politician who tries to push police around?
All right. Our next contestant is Stephanie Lawson Muhammad. She's a South Orange, New Jersey school board member. And she got pulled over. And that's how this went.
Hi, ma'am.
Can I just let her out to walk to school? My name's Stephanie Lawson Muhammad. I'm on the school board. I'm a community member of this town. I'm sorry if I was speeding.
Yes, you were speeding. That's why I'm stopping you.
I didn't realize that I was speeding.
You're doing 37 and a 25.
I'm very sorry.
Okay, do you have your driver's registration, your insurance, ma'am?
I have it all. But okay. Can she get out and walk?
Sure, that's no problem.
Oh, here we go. There it is. And it begins.
And then my other daughter has to get to school and she's going to be late.
Okay, ma'am, I'll just try to get you out of here as quickly as I can, okay?
I can't. And I'm scared of cops because you guys hurt black people.
And I'm scared of cops because you guys hurt black people. There you go.
Man, do you want me to call you an ambulance?
No, I don't want you to call me an ambulance.
And she's back.
That's an insult.
Okay, I'm just wondering. You look like you might be having a panic attack.
Don't want to call me an ambulance.
Okay, no problem.
How dare you?
Do you have your driver's license, your insurance, ma'am?
That was an insult.
Okay.
She's still upset about that ambulance coming.
Just go. Dad is on a plane. Don't call Dad. I'm sorry you have to walk. Can you call Justice and tell her that she's going to be late to park? Can you call the middle school and let them know that my daughter
is going to
park?
I mean, seriously.
You're a public servant. Call the middle school. Hey, make yourself useful, copper.
I'm not seeing my driver's
license. I have a driver's license. Can you look at my driver's license? Because I'm not seeing it.
So you're telling me that you don't have your driver's license?
I'm telling you that I don't
see. Okay, do you have your insurance card, ma'am?
Are you Maplewood cop?
No, ma'am. South Orange.
South Orange, great.
Yes, ma'am.
Call Sheena right now.
Okay. Oh, no, Sheena.
He's Bigfoot in him. That's the village president.
Okay. I'm freaked out right now.
Okay, just sit tight for me, okay?
Yeah. And then it continues. She gets the husband on the phone who wants to email the cop a copy of the insurance. It's just one silly.
I could listen to that all day.
Example of silliness after another. But then
she's
also,
so psychotic because she goes in and out of being angry, like being the victim. Now I'm going to kill you. Now I'm the victim. Now I'm going to cut your throat off.
She was sad, angry. Well, she also then talks about I'm going to call. You know, you're the. I'm going to call the police chief and the village president, and you know she calls him a skinhead cop. Cops, yeah.
And oh shoot, there's a call. There was a petition to try and get her to step down.
Yeah, she subsequently apologized after this incident became public, and said, "Yeah, that's not who she is. You heard and saw. That's not who she is.
You having a bad day? You sound pretty quanky today.
Now that's okay." I think that's a little bit better than Monica Youngblood, but I just don't think either one of those compares to Jennifer Schwartz Berkey, a New York a county board official in New York who got pulled over for speeding as well. And, I mean, this went on for 20 minutes, but this is the 10 seconds you need to understand.
Sorry, I'm having a panic attack. I have PTSD.
It's going to be tough to beat the claim of PTSD.
You have to see it, too. She is out of her mind.
And she does the whole thing, too. She does the she plays the victim. She cries. I'm poor. I can't afford this. Then she tries to Bigfoot the cop with her relationships.
But then the part is he wasn't going to give her a speeding ticket. He was just going to give her a seatbelt violation, which is $25 fine. It doesn't affect your insurance. And she was so out of her mind that she couldn't process
what
he was offering her.
Yeah, that's right.
I sound like her? Well, I think I sound like her.
Well, she was suffering from PTSD. So this is to say, and this is sort of a little public service announcement for all you elected officials out there. You know, you get pulled over by a police officer for speeding or drinking or whatever it is that you were doing. I'd say less is more. I'd say minimize the communication.
Just know that they all have body cameras on now. They all have dashboard cameras now. You might want to think about that before you freak out.
And you know, I don't know why. I mean, this again.
And lady, stop crying.
The six words that should be eliminated from the English language when used together.
What?
Do you know who I am?
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
All right. We may have another contestant in addition to Monica Youngblood, Jennifer Schwartz, Berkey, and Stephanie Lawson-Muhammad
for consideration.
Yeah, feudal lord political officials, at least those who behave like that when they're pulled over by police. Arlene on the Northwest Side.
Good morning. This woman, this Chicago Board of Education person is probably deceased. This happened many years ago. But because I was a PTA president, I had to attend all the Board of Education meetings at that time. And one of the ladies sitting next to me said, "See that board member over there?" I said, "Oh, wow, she arrogant." She said, "Well, she got hers. She went to a grocery store, long line. She decides to take her stuff, and she goes to the front of the line, puts the stuff on the conveyor, and the clerk said, 'Excuse me, ma'am.' She said, 'Well, do you know who I am?'"
There it is.
Yes, and the clerk just looked at her and said, "I don't care who you are, lady. Get your stuff off here and go back to the end of the line."
Good.
She got so embarrassed, she left the stuff and walked out the store. But we were all laughing. We said, "Wow, it's about time." It's like when you finally you're in traffic and you see an officer finally getting someone who's doing something wrong, because it seemed like everybody always gets away with everything.
Thanks for the call, Arlene. Appreciate it.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So it's time out between the North Koreans and America. North Korea saying after the president canceled the summit meeting that they're still open to meeting. And President Trump, in his address explaining the basis for the cancellation, said, he hopes Kim Jong-un gets his act together and is willing to meet someday.
So you're saying there's a chance?
As well.
North Korea has the opportunity to end decades of poverty and oppression by following the path of denuclearization and joining the community of nations. And I hope that Kim Jong-un will ultimately do what is right, not only for himself, but perhaps most importantly, what's right for his people, who are suffering greatly and needlessly. All of the Korean people, North and South, deserve to be able to live together in harmony, prosperity, and peace. That bright and beautiful future can only happen when the threat of nuclear weapons is removed. No way it can happen otherwise. If and when Kim Jong-un chooses to engage in constructive dialogue and actions, I am waiting.
We're waiting, and we'll see. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Colonel Cedric Layton, CNN military analyst and security consultant who served on the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the National Security Council. Colonel Layton, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, you bet, Dan. Good morning.
So was Trump right to cancel the summit?
Yes, I do think so. I think he was right because of many of the insults that were hurled in his direction and in, and frankly, in the direction of the United States. Having said that, though, I think the the timing of everything was definitely a bit off in the sense that we have an opportunity here to do some things. It was a way for two nations that hadn't spoken to each other for real since the end of the hostilities in the Korean War. So there was an opportunity that they're still trying to realize. As is evidenced by the president's remarks that you played and also the North Korean statements. But I think that, given the kind of rhetoric that we heard from Pyongyang, it was very important for the president to put a marker down and say, not so fast and in essence, don't talk to us in this way.
Well, what put the nail in the coffin, though? I know that not Kim Jong-un, but one of his associates called Vice President Pence a political dummy. And then they talked about,
No, you're a dummy.
No, you're a dummy. And that, even in his letter that President Trump wrote to Kim Jong-un, it says, you talk about your nuclear capabilities, but ours are so massive and powerful that I pray to God they will never have to be used.
Right. And so, Amy, when you look at the president's letter, there's a, kind of this dichotomy of a very nice, let's see if we can make a deal type language. And then there's the warning, and the warning being, if you go down a certain road, there is a great risk to you and to your regime's survival. So I think what the president was doing was he was trying to play into the desire and really the imperative of the North Korean regime to keep the Kim dynasty alive. Kim Jong-un wants to do everything in his power to maintain that power and to keep that dynasty going as part of North Korea. So when he goes and does things like he did with the president of South Korea, with President Moon, he is putting himself at some degree of risk. And there is a report that he was actually concerned that if he went to Singapore to meet with President Trump, that he risked a coup d'etat in North Korea. Whether or not that was possible, it's certainly something that we have to consider as we look at possible options for a future meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Despite some general agreement that President Trump was right to cancel the summit, there's still some criticism the president is taking from the foreign policy establishment. For example, the Wall Street Journal editorial board opining that Trump was ill-advised to agree to the summit so readily and without much planning in the first place, and he compounded the error by talking up its prospects up until the cancellation. Is that a fair criticism, or is that just a foreign policy establishment that doesn't appreciate Trump's approach to these rogue nations?
Well, I think it is a fair criticism, but I'll caveat that with this thought: the idea that you can do something bold and something innovative almost never is appreciated by any establishment, especially the foreign policy establishment. And you think about let's say Reagan's move, with Gorbachev. Everything from his speech at the Berlin Wall, where he spoke about, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Nobody wanted him to say that. The only person that really wanted to say that was Reagan himself, and
right.
He insisted on putting that back in his speech.
Same with Evil Empire, right? Evil Empire had the foreign policy establishment wetting themselves.
Exactly. And, so these kinds of bold moves, this kind of innovative thinking in foreign policy That is something that, no establishment really likes. But in this particular case, the difference between, let's say, Reagan, and how he dealt with Gorbachev, Nixon, and how he dealt with China, those summit meetings were meticulously prepared. And I think the danger here is, at least the supposition on the outside, is that the Trump administration is not preparing themselves as thoroughly as those two predecessors did, for their respective meetings. And I think that's something that they really should take to heart. It doesn't hurt to prepare. It's great to be innovative. It's great to, create the conditions for peace. But you also have to know what you're dealing with. You have to know the history of the people that you're dealing with. And you have to, anticipate some of their moves. And that's the kind of thing that that I think becomes very important, for the Trump administration going forward.
Yeah, and there was also a prep situation last weekend in Singapore, and the North Koreans didn't show up for it. So I think that was
one of
the reasons why, too, that, we'll break this off before you break this off. But I want to get to the reporters that have been chosen to be in North Korea right now that are at former nuclear test sites that apparently, I've seen the video, I'm sure you have, too, that they're blowing up certain roads and tunnels. Is this just a PR stunt, or do you think they're actually accomplishing something?
Well, it looked pretty good on video, didn't it, where everything was it was blowing up in several different directions. I kind of thought I was watching a Hollywood outtake from a from an action flick. It's really hard to say. And even journalists like CNN's Will Ripley, who is there, they basically say, look, we're journalists, we do what we do, but none of us are experts on nuclear disarmament or on the physics of something like this. I think that this may very well be a PR stunt. But it's a PR stunt that some of them, at least some of the North Korean officials there, seem to believe in. And I think that we just have to realize that they could be doing this because they may have to get rid of that site. And the reason I say that is there have been news reports, both from Chinese sources as well as some scientific sources in the West, that that basically say that the mountain in which the nuclear tests, many of the nuclear tests were conducted, was so compromised, the structure of the mountain was so compromised that it was about to collapse anyways. And so they're using this as a way to signal that they're not going to be using that again and take advantage of a situation that was caused by the explosions that they created. And if that's the case, then they're in essence trying to be masterful PR people.
Well, right,
and get some benefit there.
And they could just be covering to build tunnels elsewhere. I mean, there was a report about satellite photos that show the North Koreans building a new facility to make an intercontinental missile that could potentially strike the U.S. elsewhere. So, obviously you can't take anything at face value when it comes to Kim Jong-un's regime.
That's so true. And, they're masters at deception. They're masters at, putting lots of things in tunnels, whether it's their command and control facilities or the weapons manufacturing facilities or a test site. And my suspicion is, as an intelligence professional, is that they have other sites and that they are just getting ready to activate them should they feel the need to do so. And, this is more a publicity stunt to the detonation at Pyongyang than anything else. But it does look good when you watch the video.
I want to take a step back and just talk about this philosophically just for a second. Do you think that Trump has a better understanding of the nature of man than did President Obama? In other words, he understands that Kim Jong-un, the mullahs in Tehran, these are not just friends we haven't made yet. And what you have to do when you deal with people that do not share your interests and pose a threat to your way of life is deter them, not embrace them. And because he understands, man has fallen from that perspective, he is also fallen. That informs a different foreign policy approach than perhaps the one taken by President Obama and those on the left who want to see the good in everybody, particularly for some reason if you're a dictator.
Yeah, I think that's you know, that's certainly a weakness. You know, when you look at you know, history with you know, people who both you know, U.S. presidents as well as other foreign leaders who tend to appease or try to appease their adversaries, that's a big mistake. And I think there's something to be said for a person who has a business experience, who has you know, worked in commercial ventures of various types, that they may be, you know, not necessarily hard-nosed, but I have a different appreciation of others and their motivations. And I think that's an important component to, you know, a leader's worldview. You know, somebody who comes at it from purely an intellectual standpoint and thinks, you know, everybody's, you know, like you said, a friend that just hasn't been made yet. That's unrealistic. I mean, you know, you think of, you know, Chamberlain and Hitler, you know, before yes. World War II. You think of, you know, Jimmy Carter trying to do various things. And, you know, those people were generally not successful, you know, when it comes to preparing their nations for possible conflict, and they were also not successful in terms of diplomacy. And you know, the ultimate thing I think that could happen, you know, with vis-a-vis North Korea and you know, with President Trump, is that in some ways he's unpredictable to them, but in other ways he is you know, telling them, okay, these are the consequences, these are the lines in which you can actually work. So on the one hand, you know, if you upset the balance and you do things against us, fire and fury is, you know, is the alternative. On the other side, you know, we will embrace your efforts to join the world community if you want to do that, but you better do it, in essence, on our terms. And there's definitely something to be said for that. The question then becomes, you know, how prepared are you if they say yes? And, you know, like Gorbachev did eventually, you know, in the case of Reagan and Gorbachev and Bush and Gorbachev. So there are, you know, certain things that could go wrong no matter which philosophy you use. But I think generally speaking, it's better to have a philosophy of strength, some degree of unpredictability, but also a willingness to engage as long as you're not compromised, whether it's your security or your, you know, your ethical compass, or you know, some of the other things that you know, that are part of or should be part of international diplomacy.
Hey, Colonel, do you think President Trump will still win the Nobel Prize? I mean, he did accomplish getting three American hostages home.
Well, you know, the idea of getting three American hostages home, of course, is excellent for the families, and it's excellent for the United States. And I think President Trump was wise to again thank Kim Jong-un for, you know, for that in his letter to him. I think that, you know, as far as the Nobel Prize goes, let's see how this goes. I think more importantly, you know, if he, you know, actually does achieve the meeting, then it's really the results of the meeting that are important. I think, you know, the release of the hostages, as important as it is not going to really sway the Nobel Committee in his favor. But if he does achieve lasting peace on the Korean Peninsula, that that could then make a difference. And, you know, the potential is certainly there.
Nobel Prize, who cares? Colonel Cedric Layton, CNN military analyst and security consultant. He's served on both the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the National Security Council. Colonel Layton, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
You bet, Dan. It's a pleasure to join you and Amy. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Yeah, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Big vote in Ireland today. So for Chicago Irish who have family back in the old country, make sure they get out and vote pro-life. What is on the ballot in Ireland is an effort to repeal that country's the Eighth Amendment to the Irish Constitution, which states, quote, "The state acknowledges the right to life of the unborn, and, with due regard to the equal right to life of the mother, guarantees in its laws to respect and, as far as practicable, by its laws to defend and vindicate that right." Well, I take that as a friendly amendment to our Constitution. That's an effort by, of course, the pro-abort crowd in the modern era, because we're so enlightened, to repeal that amendment to the Irish Constitution.
And by all accounts, it's going to be a tight, close vote. I mean, they were did a live shot this morning in Ireland, and people were there's a lot of people that, you know, want to stay pro-choice and or to get pro-choice, and there's a lot who want to stay pro-life and keep the their constitution as it is.
Of course, celebrities weighing in, Bono, U2, and others that are essentially supporting those looking to repeal that amendment to the Irish Constitution. And unfortunately, Dolores O'Riordan is not alive to represent the other side in the celebrity world, the former Cranberries front woman who is pro-life.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And
there he is, surrendering, Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Turning himself into New York Police Department.
Right. He is going to face a range of charges related to, of course, his sexual misconduct, his predatory sexual behavior with respect to women.
Well, Lucia Evans, she's a former Italian movie star. I think she's dating Anthony Bourdain right now, believe it or not. She reported to investigators back in 2004 that he forced her to perform oral sex on him. So that is one of the, well, that's the type of information that a grand jury had to listen to. And they are charging him with sex abuse, rape. They're also looking into the improper use of charity donations that were launched by Harvey Weinstein.
So suggestion for whoever Harvey Weinstein surrenders to this morning that they wear a hazmat suit.
Whoa. What are all those stains?
Blood, urine, or semen?
Oh, God, I hope it's urine.
All right, so yesterday, there's this story. This has started the whole Me Too movement, so I'm so glad that he's finally getting his. He has to post a $1 million cash bond, believe it or not, surrender his passport. His attorney is not commenting to the media yet, but they said that they are going to fight this. Mm-hmm.
And then the other big story yesterday in the Me Too category was Red? You too, Red?
Morgan Freeman. Yes, 8 women have come forward that worked on various films with him, particularly the film Going in Style. And they came forward and just talked about bad behavior. You know, he would rest his hand on my lower back. He would rub my lower back. In one incident, Friedman said he kept trying to lift up my skirt and asked if I was wearing underwear. A lot of inappropriate touching. No accusations, though, of actual sexual abuse. It was more verbal with him. And we have a Chicago connection because there's a WGN entertainment reporter, Tyra Martin. She's worked there for a really long time. She works with Dean Richards and other people.
He didn't harass Dean Richards, did he?
He did not harass Dean Richards. But so this is, all right, there's music underneath this because in between when they set up reporters, different reporters come in for these press junkets, they play music to try to keep the mood lively. She's interviewed him. She said many times he has repeatedly made comments about my appearance. And he appeared to be flirting with her, and she said that she was in on the joke until one incident where Freeman went a little too far.
Hi, how are you?
I'm better now.
Thanks. I don't have any magic tricks. I kind of feel like I
showed
up for dinner without anything.
I wouldn't worry about that. It's got magic written all over you, child.
Thank you. That's good medicine for a single girl.
I'm single, too.
Are you?
Yes.
Are you enjoying bachelor
life? I'm enjoying bachelor life immensely. Because I get to look at you and drool.
Don't
respond to it. Right?
Indeed.
Get busy living. Here's the thing. One thing. Yeah. Perfect musical choice for that conversation.
She said when she stood up and she pulled her skirt, part of her dress down, he said, oh, don't pull it down now. And she said, that gave me pause, but I never felt completely uncomfortable. I mean, I guess they had this relationship. I mean, if you interview somebody many times and she kind of threw a fish line out there when she said, well, I'm a single girl.
You
know what I mean?
Was what we just heard. Would you consider that creepy or harassing, or was it flirting?
He's single. She's single. I mean,
312. They're both ready to mingle.
312-642-5600 is our Trinky Depp romantic life. Also, the bigger question, is this it for his acting career? Morgan Freeman, now that 8 women have come forward saying that he was verbally inappropriate with
them. And the fact that he's 100.
Well, he could be getting dementia. And when you get dementia, you don't really have a filter anymore. You just say what you feel.
Well, who says he has dementia? You do? He could have. We have no. Let's guess which maladies Morgan Freeman may have.
All right. So meanwhile, there's a CNN entertainment reporter. Her name's Chloe Malis. Thank you. I got that right. She said that she felt very uncomfortable after an encounter she had with Freeman. She explained this on Headline News last night. So she was interviewing the stars of that movie. So it was Michael Caine, Alan Arkin, and Morgan Freeman. And she was 6 months pregnant at the time. And this comment was made by Morgan Freeman. Listen carefully.
One time I congratulate the woman on being pregnant, and she wasn't. And so I've never done it again. For 50 years, I've never done it.
You've learned your lesson.
I learned my lesson.
I wish I was there.
This movie is...
Boy, do I wish I was there, meaning he wishes she was there the moment she became pregnant. And Alan Arkin and Michael Caine look at him.
Or something. Well, okay.
No, Michael Caine and Alan Arkin, you have to see this clip more because Morgan Freeman's, he's like, boy, I wish I was there. Like he wanted to get in her pants or something.
Or her womb.
Michael Caine and Alan Arkin. Yeah, free housing. They both gave a quick glance to Morgan Freeman like,
When Michael Caine gets loud, he gets very loud indeed.
I do say.
I can't do Michael Caine, but if you just as a quick tangent,
what?
Did you ever see the Trips movie series with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, where they argue about who's got the better Michael Caine impersonation?
Oh, is it good?
I mean, it is fantastic. First of all, they're both good, and the argument is hysterical. All right, now back to the serious matter of whether Morgan Freeman is alleged.
So here's the thing. So again, he's not accused of any sexual abuse. Just rhetorically, he's, you know, said some inappropriate things to women. Asked another woman once if she was wearing any underwear. He seems to like to put his hands on ladies' knees and lower backs. But do you think he's done? Because I don't want him to be Kevin Spacey'd, meaning put on a shelf and that's it.
He's not accused of anything on the order of what Kevin Spacey is accused of. And this is, you know, we've said this before when we talk about these Me Too stories. We have to make distinctions between somebody who's accused of rape and someone who's accused of being
creepy,
obnoxious or creepy, right? Like, arguably, Freeman is. Although, I mean, I got to say, maybe I'm a Philistine.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to go back to the cave from which I emerged. But those two clips, coverage they were getting and the story, the CNN story, because they have 8 women saying, calling what he did to them harassment or just inappropriate behavior or inappropriate comment, but call me a troglodyte.
I'd love to
call me a Cro-Magnon man.
I'm not
seeing anything other than flirtatiousness that, you know, crossed the line a little bit, but I don't know that this
elevates him to being shunned from Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some of those comments. Perhaps the second example in particular deserve a bit of a hand slap. To, you know, knock it off.
Right,
that's too far.
But again, the WGN entertainment producer, she said that she was always in on the joke. You know, like she was. They flirted with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're
they have
if
a
you're
relationship.
Right. Right. So the question is, the whole like skirt thing, that's creepy and that's inappropriate. And if you're making a woman uncomfortable, then stop it.
Yeah, and don't go. Yeah, you took a little too far. Like, right. Oh, don't pull that down now.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? I'm enjoying myself. Right. I'm enjoying when the view. Don't take my view away.
When you ogle me in studio, if it just gets too far, I just say, hey, Jason, back it down.
No, you like, tone it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, you know, lay off a little. You're making me feel uncomfortable.
Because, I mean, it's sort of this, like, 8 women have said he made some kind of comment or whatever. And so now it's like because of the volume, now we're supposed to put Morgan Freeman in this category with Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey and others. I don't think so. Not based on what has been reported so far.
And real quick, the Gwyneth Paltrow, she's had an axe to grind against Harvey Weinstein for a long time because when she was doing Shakespeare in Love, he called her up to his hotel room, and she didn't think anything was going on. And here she is on Howard Stern.
And you were alone in a room with him,
too. I was alone in a room with him.
Did you have any vibe leading up to that he might be dangerous?
Definitely not.
He just comes out of the blue with it.
It was out of the blue.
And what came out of the blue is, let's give each other massages.
Then all of a sudden, let's go take a massage.
Yeah.
That's the move.
That was the move.
And she felt so uncomfortable. She was dating Brad Pitt at the time, and Brad Pitt confronted Harvey Weinstein, like, knock it off.
He said, if you ever make her feel uncomfortable again, I'll kill you, or something like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Except we've reported this story before.
No, but she finally talked about it.
Yeah, and the other part of the story that apparently Howard Stern didn't get to, and probably she didn't get to either, is then Brad Pitt went and worked with Harvey Weinstein again after that.
A lot of people did. Because he was...
I don't care. I don't care what a lot of people did. I'm not excusing it. So let's, holster the Brad Pitt hero worship. Oh, well,
I think you're jealous.
Jealous of what?
Just kidding.
Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
I'm confused for Brad Pitt chauffeur all the time. Bob in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, Amy just was talking. Morgan Freeman very well may be a creep. You know, I don't know. Maybe all these women are right. But that last comment with Michael Caine, I don't think that was about her. I think that was saying that he wishes he was there when Michael stupidly called a pregnant woman who wasn't pregnant.
Could be.
Wait, did you see it, though? You have to see it.
Was he,
rather than hear it.
Was he addressing her?
Yeah, and he was undressing her with his eyes.
Okay.
It was very
thanks for the call, Bob.
Nonverbal communication, if you know what I mean.
Okay. I mean, this
boy,
is...
I wish I was there. And he leans in toward her. No, it wasn't.
Did he, like, nestle up to her womb?
Dude, don't bet. I want in. Let me in. It looks warm and comfy.
I don't want to make fun of people alleging that they were made uncomfortable, but...
You have to watch it, okay?
A text from 847. Uh-oh. Every time Morgan Freeman harasses a woman, he earns a freckle. I don't even really understand that, but yeah, I get that. Red has freckles. He's Irish. Remember from Shawshank? He's Irish.
Get busy living or get busy dying.
He's an institution man, Red. He just wants to go down to Zihuatanejo.
He wants to go down.
With his friend Andy Dufresne.
Oh, right.
Let him alone. They just
send you here for life. That's exactly what they take.
Let them sand down that boat together.
In Zihuatanejo or wherever?
Yeah.
I've had some long nights in stir. Alone in the dark with nothing but your thoughts, time can draw out like a blade. That was the longest night of my life.
You know, I think you should try some of those lines from Shawshank on the ladies. It's safer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, take a quick call. Carla in Chicago Heights, the Heights. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan. Good morning. I was just calling to tell you how proud I was of you. For what you did for all of the Republicans in Illinois when you appeared with Pat Brady downtown Chicago. All the things you said were spot on. Your points were exact. They were honest. They were truthful. And they were very pertinent to the time we live in. And Dan, you know, when they got you on there, Pat Brady was just trying to attack personally, and you stayed right with the issues. You stayed right with the message and the point of our party and our values. And I encourage every listener to get out there and see that video on YouTube. It was fantastic, and it gets right to the point, and no one could have done it.
Thanks very much for the call, Carla. I appreciate that. That's the City Club. You can go to the City Club's website or go online, like you said, YouTube's to search City Club and me and Pat Brady.
Did you just say YouTube's it?
Well, she's from the Heights. She's got me talking like that now.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How many of these stories do you need to hear such as the one in Oklahoma City that Mike Scott's been reporting on all morning, before you understand that law-abiding people protecting themselves is perhaps the best we can do in an imperfect world to keep ourselves, to keep our families, to keep our children safe at home, in places of business, and in schools. This Oklahoma City incident, man walks into Louis' Grill and Bar, opens fire, striking two people, and then the guy who opened fire and injured those two people flees the scene. There's a bystander with a pistol, confronts the shooter, and fatally shoots him outside the restaurant. According to the Oklahoma City police captain, Bo Matthews, right now, all I know is that it was just a good Samaritan that was there and looks like he took the right measures to be able to put an end to a terrible, terrible situation. You know, you think a good guy with a gun versus a bad guy with a gun. The remedy for a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. That's just, you know, an NRA sloganeering. No, I mean, you know, when you see it happen again and again in practice, maybe that should be instructive for our policymakers. And maybe you want to distinguish the good guy with the gun, the good Samaritan in Oklahoma City, for example.
Yeah. And the shooter was
from
the only,
gangbangers.
Yeah, the shooter was the only person who died in the incident. His identity has not been released and his motive unknown. But a man told an Oklahoma TV station that his daughter and granddaughter, who were at the restaurant for a birthday party, were shot and that they would like to personally thank the bystander who killed the shooter.
So good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. On the flip side, we've got new information. Emails about guns between one Rahm Emanuel and one Arne Duncan indicate they're two bad guys trying to score political points off of dead children. A FOIA request produced this information, as reported by the Baltimore Post. Advisors to then-President Barack Obama immediately strategized as to how to exploit the tragic shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School to push gun control. Tap people's emotions, said Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel to Arne Duncan, then Education Secretary, 2 days after the massacre that left 26 children dead.
What is that? Rahm Emanuel always say, never let a crisis go to waste.
Yeah. What? Listen to this back and forth.
Oh, I can't wait.
Between, you know, the dark Sith, Tiny Dancer, you know, and the idiot toady rebounder, Arne Duncan. What are your thoughts? Duncan asks Emanuel on an email with the subject line, CT shooting. Go for a vote this week ASAP before it fades, replied Emanuel. Tap people's emotion. Make it simple assault weapons. Yup, thanks, Duncan. Emanuel adds, when I did Brady Bill and assault weapons for Clinton, we always made it simple. Simple. Criminals or war weapons? Duncan inquires, gun show loophole, database, cop killer bullets, too complicated? Emanuel answers, cop killer maybe, the other no. Got it. You think this is about public safety?
This is about the children?
Yeah. Well, exactly.
For the kids.
War weapons, right? This rhetoric they've been using, demagoguery they've been using, going for 25 years, going back to the Clinton era, as Rahm was reminiscing.
How do you get those emails?
FOIA request.
Oh.
Go for a vote this week before it fades. Tap people's emotions. Make it simple, assault weapons. We're not trying to do public safety. We're trying to do gun banning. We're trying to exert more power over the individual in this country or in this city or in this state, since we're talking about Chicago's very own Tiny Dancer and Arne Duncan. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. This is a report in the Daily Wire. We'll tweet it out so you can share it with your friends, and you should do so. You want to know what these people actually think of you? It's remarkable to me. we've said it before, but it just bears repeating, and this is about as good an example as I can remember in recent memory, maybe with the exception of Ronner's Madigan's favorite Republican ads against Jeanne Ives. Do you understand how little they think of you? Do you understand how little the political ruling class cares about you? They feign interest or concern for your lives as needed to protect their perch. Full stop. So I know everybody wants to ascribe the best of motivations to their political leaders, which are, again, just your temporary representatives. They're not your betters. I know you want to ascribe good motivations, and people continue to do so in spite of all of the evidence that's presented. As to how they actually feel about you, what they actually think of you, the utility, or how they treat you as sort of just another tool to utilize or not utilize to advance their particular interests. For the kids, for our community, this great city, this great state, this great country. Are you about done falling for the pap that comes rolling out of the mouths and dripping from the fingers of these people? I mean, we're going into Memorial Day weekend where we honor our war dead, the people who didn't come back in service to liberty for others, people who actually were selfless. They gave their lives for the rights and freedoms, dreams and aspirations of people they didn't know. That is about 180 degrees from where the political class is in this city, this state, this country these days. I mean, just snap out of it and share this, a little exchange between that dipstick Duncan and, Tiny Dancer. Tiny Dancer is a craven, amoral power monger. That's all he is. Share it. Doug in Waukegan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning. You may want to check out, there's a book that was put together by a professional public relations firm at the expense of Mike Bloomberg, the Gotham Pimp, as I like to call him.
Not bad.
It's called Effective Gun Violence, or Gun Violence Control Through Effective Messaging. If you do a search for that, you'll find it. And it's basically a script as to exactly all the tactics that the left has used in the gun control discussion. They don't want to use gun control. They changed the term to gun violence messaging because they did polling and found gun control had too many visceral reactions.
Sure.
And so it's a beautiful piece, and I'm sure it cost a pretty penny, but you take a look at everything that's happened since Sandy Hook and onward, and no one's doubting the tragedies, but you take a look and it's roughly, I believe it's about 8,000 good gun, lawful gun uses for every criminal one, including homicides, suicides, armed robberies, and injuries. When you look at the actual available statistics, it's about 8,000 to 1. And they don't want their advice to the gun control people is don't get caught up in wonky statistics. Stay focused on emotions.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is part of a coordinated effort, and they've been following it just in lockstep.
Thanks for the call, Doug. Well, and look, I mean, they redefine all kinds of things. I mean, don't remember what taxes were? George Stephanopoulos, when he was a Clinton flack, or when he was a Clinton flack formally as opposed to informally on ABC now, taxes were contributions. marriage redefinition is marriage equality. I mean, not only do they redefine terms, I mean, they redefine things right out of existence, like sex, male, female. They're Orwellian masters when it comes to the language, as long as they have, a sedate populace, I suppose. Carl in Arlington Heights.
Good morning, you two. That last caller hit it right on the head. And to the point of the exchange between Duncan and Emanuel, two leading Democrats nationwide, even in private, that's as substantive as they can possibly get on a debate as important as firearms. That's all they got. There is no substance. There is no thought. They're bereft of ideas, so all they can do is attack and emote. That's their case.
Thanks for the call, Carl. Tom in Deer Park.
The nature of the emails revealed is neither surprising or shocking. The other caller mentioned Michael Blomberg's dollars, and it's all part of an agenda where truth doesn't matter. And in on it are the Chicago Tribune, your competitor Up the Dial, and the Archdiocese of Chicago. And this is what they put out to the casual people that really might not understand what the issues are. It's pure sophistry.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, boy, sad story. I guess those Netflix royalties aren't cutting it for Rachel Dolezal. She's got this documentary on Netflix, The Rachel Divide. Rachel, her family, her critics reckon with the aftermath of the debate about redefining her race from white to black. Yeah. So speaking of redefinitions, as we were talking about with the gun propaganda. By the way, let me correct myself. Rachel Dolezal has already also redefined Rachel Dolezal.
Oh, is she back to being
No, she's
white?
Still black as far as I know, as far as she believes. Her legal name, new legal name, as of 2016, did you know this?
I didn't know she changed her
name. Oh, yeah. Nkechi Diallo.
Common spelling?
Yeah.
Nkechi Diallo.
Yeah, I had some Nkechi Diallo with my scrambled eggs from Denny's this morning.
I planted that in my side yard.
Yeah. It's nice. It's nice in the spring.
Yeah, it blooms very well.
She is accused of first-degree theft by welfare fraud, perjury in the second degree, and false verification for public assistance. She could face up to 15 years in prison.
She didn't.
According to court documents in Spokane, Diallo / Dolezal illegally received about $9,000 in food assistance, about $100 in childcare assistance. The restitution is just under $9,000, as I mentioned.
She's got to pay it back, right? You said.
The government in Washington State apparently would like her to do that. The alleged the investigation into the alleged theft started in March of last year when an investigator received information that the Diallo Dolezal had written a book that got published. He had heard she was getting public assistance, but also knew that a typical publishing contract for a book would lead one to believe she was not entitled to public assistance. And that investigator looked into it and, according to the court documents, concluded that she was frauding the state and taxpayers. The state of Washington seeks prosecution and restitution in the matter, according to court documents. She also requests she be disqualified from receiving food assistance for at least 12 months for breaking a food assistance rule on purpose. Yeah, gee, that seems like a minimal charge, but the criminal prosecution, that could be heap big fun.
Wow.
Hmm.
I wonder if she's talking to her parents again.
I wonder if she'll invited back to be the Spokane NAACP chapter president.
I'm pulling for her.
Not
kidding. She should learn her lesson.
Yes, she is a disgraceful figure. There's no question about it, and the disgrace just continues.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
One thing I learned today is Denny's is definitely not shy about their breakfast.
No.
If anybody's watching at home, on the web here, I mean, this is like, they delivered 10 pounds of food.
Like a grand slam quality breakfast. That's a hearty breakfast at a reasonable price. That's Denny's.
That is not processed food. That is real food.
That's good stuff.
And I'm using it as a to-go doggy bowl for Bunky now. So thank you, Denny's.
Our friend Jason Hill from DePaul, philosophy professor. We just had him on. He's got a new book out, sort of an open letter from an immigrant to America. Very interesting guy. He's penned an op-ed for The Hill that was making the rounds yesterday. I saw him on Fox, too, being interviewed about it. Mr. President, please send the troops to Chicago. President Trump, during your presidential campaign, you made a promise to send federal troops to drain the swamp in D.C. and also one festering with feral thugs and gangbangers who are committing genocide among black Americans right here in the great city of Chicago. I implore you, writes Jason Hill, to use your powers to suspend the dated Posse Comitatus Act, which I've often raised as an issue when we've discussed this, so he addresses it. Suspend the dated Posse Comitatus Act, which unfairly limits your abilities to use domestic militarization to respond to crises, and send the resources necessary to stem the violence overrunning Chicago. What do you think? Should President Trump intervene where the civilian political authorities in Chicago and Illinois have failed? Suspend Posse Comitatus, which is federal law.
Okay.
But it's just a federal law. It's
Posse Comitatus is not a dance move?
It is also a dance move.
Like a kickball change, yeah. The Posse Comitatus?
Yeah.
I guess I heard that on Dancing with the Stars.
It was popular on Soul Train in like the early 80s.
So, wasn't familiar with Posse Comitatus, which is a federal law, which...
I'm not familiar with Posse Comitatus either, because we were talking about Posse Comitatus. But, so, I don't know what that other thing is.
I'm sorry.
But it's essentially using federal troops for domestic policing, okay. A prohibition against that.
Right.
So,
there's also been talk, you know, we've had this conversation several times about, you know, sending out the National Guard. To the South Side, to Inglewood, to Chatham, to South Shore.
Well, right.
To Austin neighborhood.
There's, you know, ostensibly Governor Rauner could take that under advisement. But is this something where President Trump should intervene, where nobody has in Chicago and in Illinois for generations to quell the violence, as Jason Hill suggests? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA turnkey.protext. Now, we've had politicians suggest UN peacekeeping forces.
Oh, that's right.
And also idiotic. The idea of foreign armies on our soil, I don't think so.
Yeah, no.
But federal troops, you know, scramble the men and women up at Great Lakes Naval Station and have them come down to help out. Let's, you know, setting aside the legalistic arguments for a moment. Is this a good idea just in terms of doing what is necessary to establish some sort of detente on the west and south sides of Chicago where you have hundreds of people being murdered every year, 3/4 to 4/5 of whom are black, 95% of whom are minorities, black and Latino, and thousands more shot. So seriously injured, maimed in some cases, every single year. And, of course, as the summer sets in, you can guarantee we're going to see a spike in the carnage in Chicago.
This weekend's going to be bad. We have a string of three days where it's just sunshine and warm weather.
And
you know they're going to shut off the lakefront, too, because there's going to be gangbangers in there, and then they don't let us drive our cars in to protect us from gangbangers.
And consider what the civilian political authorities are doing. Against the backdrop of Jason Hill's proposal. Jeff Landry, the attorney general for the state of Louisiana, writes an op-ed in the Daily Caller, Chicago is holding American law enforcement hostage.
What?
Yeah.
In what way? What does that mean?
With respect to immigration.
Oh.
Jeff Sessions, Justice, Homeland Security, wants local state law enforcement to notify DHS of the scheduled release dates of criminal aliens wanted by DHS and to allow federal immigration officers on their premises in order to inquire about an individual's rights to remain. These are common sense public safety measures, writes Landry. In 2016, the DOJ IG released a memorandum noting that many jurisdictions receiving federal grant dollars were in violation of the law by withholding immigration information from federal officials. And certainly, Wine Club buddies Rauner and Tiny Dancer have contributed to this. Shortly thereafter, the Department of Justice mandated a particular condition that jurisdictions offer proof they were in compliance with federal law regarding information sharing. And again, the state of Illinois, the county of Cook, and the city of Chicago have received letters from the Department of Justice to this effect. We've seen them. We reported on them. Jeannie Ives talked about the letter that Bruce Rauner received during the primary campaign. that is consistent with what Attorney General Landry is describing. And then he goes on to say, General Sessions simply sustained that policy by including narrowly tailored conditions to ensure grant dollars are not given to state and local jurisdictions, which frustrate federal immigration enforcement. However, the city of Chicago took their prioritization of protecting illegal immigrants over stopping crime to the courtroom. Chicago sued DOJ, and the Liberal District Court and Seventh Circuit decided that Attorney General Sessions lacked the authority to impose these two conditions. While their disrespect for the Constitution was egregious enough, their further abuse of the judicial process is causing even more widespread harm. The nationwide injunction issued by federal courts means that hundreds of millions of grant dollars are being withheld from law enforcement agencies, which comply willingly with immigration laws. Because of its nationwide scope, the injunction purports to settle the law for the entire U.S., and this aggrandizement of power deprives other courts the opportunity to decide the issue for themselves, thereby frustrating the development of law. The nationwide injunction is negatively impacting law enforcement agencies that are not antagonistic toward federal immigration officials and federal immigration law enforcement the way Chicago and Illinois is. That's how Chicago is holding American law enforcement hostage. So while you have the carnage on the west and south side of Chicago, and by the way, increasingly the violent crime, of course, not limited to the west and south sides.
No, there's crime everywhere.
Right.
I mean, look down the Magnificent Mile. Look down in your neighborhood, in my neighborhood. It's everywhere.
So
I had a Blaine student who was mugged on the way to school.
Well, yeah, I mean, that carjacking on Mag Mile a couple weeks back.
Yeah. I mean, they're getting the nail salon. I mean, there's so in Roscoe Village, broad daylight at 11 a.m., they'll storm that place, take all the ladies' purses, their cell phones, and the cash from the register and walk out the door with guns. They pointed a gun to my friend's head. And, like, nothing's, they haven't been caught yet.
Auto theft in the suburbs, the spike in carjacking in the suburbs, people coming from the city. Wilding incidents, some of which are reported, many of which, if you talk to Chicago police, are not reported. It's worse than what is actually reported. And so against that, you have what? Rahm Emanuel and the political class, Republican and Democrat, in this sorry state. Frustrating federal law enforcement. That's how they're engaging with the federal government. So maybe you can understand why Jason Hill is suggesting, even though I'm reticent to embrace the suggestion, but you can understand why he and others previously have suggested, hey, President Trump, we're not going to get the help we need from local and state. We have local and state government that is not abiding their first responsibility to provide for the physical security of their constituents. So maybe you at the federal level can, you know, bring in the cavalry until we get, if ever, elected officials in this state who are serious about keeping people safe. I mean, that's the argument. And against the backdrop of what they're actually doing at the Chicago and county and the Cook County and state of Illinois level, you know, it's a pragmatic suggestion. I'll say that. Carmina on in South Shore, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think that's probably the dumbest thing I've heard in a while.
Which part?
So is the military supposed to be in those neighborhoods every day of the week, up close to about 6 months of the year? It's so outlandish and just it's not even rational. How about tightening the laws in Wisconsin and Indiana, this is empirical evidence where the guns are being traced to.
Uh-huh.
You tightening the laws in those nearby states, which is where they get the guns.
Yeah.
You put more police on the street,
uh-huh,
right? So as a Southside person, yeah, do I want to just sit on my porch and not have a gun come in my home? Or, you know, I would like to hear children jumping rope and skipping on the sidewalk instead of seeing them basically encased in their home because of the violence? Of course. We want tighter gun laws.
Uh-huh.
We want those who are criminals to be incarcerated and punished like anybody else. But to suggest to have the military in certain neighborhoods is akin to saying, put the military in rural areas where we know where school shootings usually happen. Where you have a particular population where school
shootings happen, put the military in those rural areas.
It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah, so I'm not necessarily embracing the military idea, but let's explore what the reality on the ground you're describing, shall we?
Sure.
So let's just say that what you describe as the problem is the problem. It's not, but let's just say that it is. So you think it's more practical for what to happen? For Rahm and Rahner and whoever else from Chicago to go tell Wisconsin and Indiana what their gun laws are going to be? You think that's going to happen? That's my first question. My second question is, you've had more cops on the street, right? More cops on the street with a city that's functionally bankrupt, run by one party for the last 100 years. You've had Rahm Emanuel and his 50 trained SEALs on the city council there for going on two terms now. And we talked to Kevin Graham, the FOP president, yesterday. There's 11,000 cops right now. He says what we actually need is about almost 25% more, more like 14,000. You think that's going to happen? You think we have the money for that? So do you see a problem with the civilian political leadership in Chicago and in the state of Illinois at all? Or do you just kind of want to outsource our problems to Wisconsin and Indiana?
Well, I don't think it is such a mutually exclusive. The answer is what you want me to give you, which is hyperbole. What I'm telling you,
and just answer my question. I don't care what your answer is. Answer my question. I don't care what your answer is.
You don't even live on the South Side. So I'm trying to teach you what's happening. The guns are being traced in other states.
Can you answer my question? Can you answer my question about the civilian political leadership in this city and state?
Yeah, thank you. Sucks here in Illinois.
Thank you. Thank you. That's my point. Thank you. And what does Carmina and the Southside folks do? We need more gun control. We need more redundant laws. We need to kind of triple down. Yes, everybody here sucks, and I'm going to continue voting for them. Everybody here sucks, I'm going to continue voting for them. You can't tell me what's going on in my neighborhood because I live here and you don't. Oh, okay, well, then if you live there and I don't, then you fix it. You're right. I don't live on the Southside. Is that the attitude? You fix it then. You don't need any help. You got it. Everybody's an expert. Everybody's an expert at what's wrong, and then they continue to pursue the same policies and with the same people. Okay. I can read statistics. I can read news reports. I know how many murders and shootings occur because of the data collection in all the South Side neighborhoods. I know what's happening to home values on the South Side. Property taxes in part. Lack of safety, terrible schools. And what do we get? Wisconsin and Indiana have less restrictive gun laws than Illinois, so that's the problem. Okay. Deborah in Arlington Heights.
Yes, we're at war, and you treat it like a war. Whatever it takes. If it takes the military, tanks, scare the sagging pants off these gangbangers and thugs, because you need to tell them that you mean business. And it's better to keep the innocent people safe no matter what it takes. That's the way I look at it. I don't care where you live.
Thanks for the call, Deborah. Robert in Milwaukee.
Hi. I was only going to make one point, and the point was about feral children. You could have all the federal troops you want. They aren't going to be that familiar with the areas anyways. But the problem is constantly rewarding bad behavior. You just cannot have these men that father children and just continue to move on without repercussions. As far as I'm the father of two. They're grown. They're college educated. Same woman. And as far as I am concerned, if you're going to father a child, you're not going to provide for the child. Well, golly, you're getting a free vasectomy courtesy of the state.
Okay. She did that to the 30-year-old who won't leave his parents' house.
No forced sterilizations, but, it is commencement.
This took a nice turn.
It is commencement season.
Members of the graduating class, I have only one thing to say to you today. It's a jungle out there. You got to look out for number one, but don't step in number two. And so, to all you graduates, as you go out into the world, my advice to you is, don't go. It's rough out there. Move back with your parents. Let them worry about it.
There you go. Robert in Oak Brook. Hey, Robert. Robert in Oak Brook. Robert in Oak Brook going once.
Going twice.
And Robert in Oak Brook is gone. Sold!
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy and President Trump. I know focus of yesterday was, of course, on the cancellation of the summit with Kim Jong-un, Rocket Man, with the possibility that...
Yeah, with the tiny hands, right?
Yeah, with the possibility that they could still convene at a later date. But this other news, the world of sports, but also justice, Trump issued a full pardon... posthumously to to boxing great Jack Johnson, who's the first black heavyweight champion of the world, the first part of the 20th century. He was arguably, and I think persuasively, wrongly prosecuted under a racist law back in 1913, the Mann Act, for taking his white girlfriend across state lines for quote-unquote immoral purposes. Had to spend a year.
It was a bit of a stretch, but he spent a year in jail, and that ruined his career.
Yeah, that's right.
I watched some of his, like black and white film yesterday. They were showing of his boxing matches. Yeah. He was good.
1910, fight of the century.
Wow.
That's not bad for racist Hitler to.
President Trump was confronted by Sylvester Stallone and asked, he told him about his story. And then President Trump tweeted about it a few months ago, and it actually came to fruition yesterday. They had Lennox Lewis was there.
Yes.
Bunch of greats were there.
I mean, I know you want to give Rocky Balboa credit, but I mean, still, ultimately, it was his pen.
No, I know.
And so, hey.
Why didn't Obama do it? First African-American president, he should have pardoned Mr. Johnson.
A stroke for racial justice, however late, by racist Hitler. I mean, it's just worth noting, I suppose. In other sports news, have you seen the new Northwestern facility?
For just the athletes or for the students or for everybody?
Well, it's really an athletic facility, but there's some...
Well, I know they're working on a new basketball arena.
This is the Ryan Fieldhouse and Walter Athletic Center.
Oh.
It's right on...
I bet it's gorgeous.
It's right on Lake Michigan. $270
million. Wow.
$270 million. The facility was described by one Yahoo sports writer as like the Jetsons dropped on the shores of Lake Michigan. 45-foot floor-to-ceiling windows that run the expanse of the entire practice field overlooking the lake. One recruit's father called it the infinity pool of indoors because you've got like this panoramic view.
Oh, I'm sure I'm sure it is an infinity pool.
Just by comparison, Clemson, which wins national championships, they have a huge training facility as well with a slide, mini golf course, bowling lanes. That cost $200 million less than Northwestern's. Oregon, which is considered the gold standard, cost $86 million.
And ours cost $270?
$250 million. And it's still $65,000 to go there.
Well, that's why.
Let me just say this one more time, and I have the standing as an alumnus.
Yes.
Do not send your kids to Northwestern or your athletes.
Wow, that's mean. Instead, go to the University of Iowa.
No.
The Harvard of the Midwest.
No, I didn't say don't get an education. I just said don't go to Northwestern. Here, did you see this picture that Kristen McQuarrie from the Tribune tweeted? You think the exodus from Illinois is not happening? Mom in the suburbs plotted on a map where all of her son's classmates are going to college. Look at this.
Not one is in Illinois.
They're all in Indiana, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, and then the rest of the country. I'm telling you. All right. Since I wanted to get a little sports in, because we're going to talk about the intersection of sports and heady notions like free speech with our next guest, David French, who is writer at National Review, of course, constitutional lawyer, author and veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. His latest piece is Conservatives Fail the NFL Speech Test. David French, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So conservatives failed this free speech test. There was a, you know, at least some celebration in some quarters that we're not going to see the spectacles on the sidelines of millionaires kneeling before the flag and during the anthem. And but you suggest that conservatives who want to enforce respect for the flag and the anthem are making mistakes.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Yes. And to be clear, I don't support kneeling. I don't think they should do it. The issue here is we live in a nation where people are using the power that they have to try to stifle speech they don't like. And a lot of times conservatives, most of the time conservatives are on the receiving end of that. So think about things like forcing out Brendan Eich from Mozilla or forcing out James Damore from Google or all the nonsense we see on college campuses from coast to coast. And even when it's not the government, because Google and Yale and Claremont McKenna College and others are not the government, we say, come on, let's have a little room for free speech. You don't have to force everyone to toe the party line. And if you do that, you're destroying the culture of free speech. And oh, by the way, get up off your knee, kneeling football player, or we'll fire you. And that is a fundamental hypocrisy. And it's a hypocrisy, I think, that actually even exacerbates the problem. Because before Donald Trump made it an issue, when he was in a rally last year and said the player should be fired, there were six players who were kneeling at the start of the game, six. It was kind of petering out after Colin Kaepernick had got it started. And then after he said that, it was more than 200. And so what ends up happening is you not only expose that your view is essentially, well, free speech for me and the people I like, but not for the people I don't like. It also exacerbates the problem because then you start to challenge these NFL players. You're challenging their courage. You're challenging their manhood. You're saying, do what I say. And that causes an awful lot of people to rebel against that notion. And so you're not only, you know, failing to consistently defend free speech, you're exacerbating the problem.
Well, it sounds like you're blaming President Trump for the spread of this.
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, it really was. It was a protest that was on its last legs. You know, when you're down to six players, and you saw that over the course of the season too. You know, he made his challenge to fire the players, and it was, what, 200 and some odd who knelt the next week. And so long as Trump puts it front and center, players kneel. When it goes off of the radar screen, well, you have a few committed activists out there who might, and they might do it for a little while. But it's just not something that's dominant on the national scene. It's not something that's dominant in your football experience. It's a very minor, small-scale protest until the president puts it front and center, and that takes it all to 11 once again.
Well, then, but following the logic of your argument, he's not exacerbating anything. He's unearthing the problem. He's bringing more of what is sort of hiding in the shadows out into the sunlight. I mean, I agree with you, generally speaking, but I don't think it's exacerbating it. I think it's fantastic. I want people to show me who they are. I want the NFL to be beset, the cowards in the owner's boxes and Roger Goodell and all of, you know, the squirmy little people in NFL front offices. I want them to be beset by all of this. I want to know where they stand. And this forces people to take positions. It forces lines to be drawn. I love it.
I hate it.
Why?
I
well, but why?
Incredibly, I think it's incredibly divisive. What
yes.
He's trying, what he's doing is he's saying to Americans, and did you hear what he said yesterday?
Yeah, if you don't stand up, get out of the country.
Well, no, I don't agree with that, obviously.
Get out of the
no, right.
Well, okay. Well, you got to draw.
True.
Well, you got to draw your own line here, don't you? Your own line.
Yeah,
but
that's just, you know, his bloviation. He's not going to deport the left tackle for the Baltimore Ravens.
No, you can't tell me that if a Democratic president had said something about like that Fox would be outraged about it for three straight weeks.
Well, no, I agree. Look, it's a dumb statement.
And he said it before,
but
though,
but I mean, right? Around. But I mean, you know, Colin Kaepernick is not going to be sent to Gitmo. Okay, I mean,
well,
so
he
let's
should go to the Canadian Football League.
I'm just saying, but I mean, David, the thing is, you want sort of these differences that are real to sort of be papered over, and I think it's better that we have this confrontation.
Well, what I don't know what's real, what differences that is real that you're talking about. I think what you're dealing with, if you know some of these people who are involved in some of these protests, some of these folks that are being vilified so extremely, you know, I think they're misguided, but a lot of them are actually really good people who are making a mistake in good faith. And then to have the President of the United States say, you shouldn't have a job, and if you're not fired, and if these owners don't fire you, then the league should be out of business. I think that's absurd. It's especially absurd when you're talking about the president talking about compelled patriotism, given that one of the core constitutional values in our country stands opposed to compelled patriotic displays. It's one of the foundational constitutional values, and one of the foundational constitutional decisions in the country. Now, the president's not trying to enforce it,
right?
Thankfully,
that's right.
But what he's doing is what he's doing. The fundamental core of what the president of the United States is doing is opposed to these basic American constitutional values. And I don't think it's really even all that defensible for him to do this.
Well,
I think it's repugnant.
Well, okay, but I think there's a little bit of a battle for the culture here, and you know, these athletes have big platforms, and we're supposed to, I mean, it's not we're supposed to, but what happens is people heap adulation on them and give their opinions on things like police power or a range of other issues more import than they're warranted on the merits because they're a great football player, basketball player, baseball player, whatever. And I like Michael Bennett being exposed as a charlatan, the Seattle Seahawks defensive end, who made up a story about the police in Vegas and otherwise has been an outspoken antagonist and of the police, of the president, of the country, kind of one step down from Colin Kaepernick. I like these people being exposed for the frauds they are. And the only way that you do that is you sort of foment a difference. You foment a discussion about who believes what about this particular issue, say police, since this is part of what started
all
of these protests.
Well, the reason Michael Bennett was exposed is because there was a videotape of an actual incident that he participated in. He'd been exposed whether he knelt or not. I mean, the thing is, you know, and speaking of the outsized power of celebrity and why people have a platform, good Lord, that's why Donald Trump's president of the United States.
Yeah, okay.
He's a celebrity in chief who millions of people knew because he was a reality TV star and real estate huckster. So, you know, it's really rich to me to see this guy trying to define patriotism when his own view of service in wartime was his fear of STDs was his personal Vietnam. I can't think of a less suitable individual to articulate patriotism. Show some service to your country in the prime of your youth, dude, before you're telling who should get out of the country.
Well,
he's serving the country now.
Yeah, but I mean, he you could say he's an unusual carrier of all kinds of policies and all kinds of fights that conservatives have been waging for a long time, whether it's fiscal policies or cultural matters, social mores. You're right. He's certainly an imperfect vessel for many of these issues. But that doesn't. But you're obsessing about Donald Trump. I'm more interested in the cultural fight and exposing the faults between the sides. That's my point. So that you can force people to decide on which side of the skirmish line they stand.
Do we lack for that? I mean, do we lack for exposing differences in the sides in our culture? That's what we have in abundance. We have exposing differences in sides constantly. That's the news 24/7. You know, what we lack is actually unity. What we lack is some sort of place that's not being seriously politicized.
So what should we unify
that's
around?
The problem I have is conservatives are now saying, what we've said for years and years and years is, does everything have to be politicized to the point where people are going to be fired if they express their point of view? And then now, I guess apparently the answer is yeah, it's got to all be politicized. And And whenever we control an institution, we'll fire people that do things we don't like. And when the other side controls an institution, they'll fire people who do things that they don't like. And so I don't think we lack for divisions in this country.
Well, actually, the difference in this case is you don't have anybody in the NFL being fired. You may not even have them being fined. I mean, you've got the owner of the Jets saying, I'll pay fines for anybody who wants to kneel on the sidelines. Okay, fine. This is a private enterprise, private league, private action. Compare that to Brendan Eich or James Damore. So the left seems a little bit more dug in when it comes to enforcing an orthodoxy of opinion than even do conservatives who are roiled by people kneeling for the anthem. But I guess my larger question is, though, when you talk about, you know, looking for places of unity with cultural Marxists and avowed socialists, what does that look like? What kind of unity should conservatives be trying to forge?
Well, you know, one of the things is you see, for example, before the president put this issue front and center on the national stage again, the actual national anthem moment, even in the NFL, where kneeling had started, was, you know, 99-point-something% of your players are standing. And one of the things that, you know, one of the interesting contrasts here, a lot of people have talked about the difference, you know, the NBA has a rule against kneeling.
Right.
On the books, although it's pretty well known within the NBA that that's not something that would be enforced if players chose to do so. But one of the differences is a lot of people don't realize the longstanding grievances between the players and the owners in pro football that are very different than what exists in other professional sports. And I think what's happened is a lot of people sort of parachuted into the NFL debate, not realizing the extent to which this conflict between owners and players is based on a lot of other things. And so I think one of the things that you do is you just kind of let it play out, just let it chill out. One of the things that builds unity in this country is when you protect the rights of others that you would like to exercise yourself. And, you know, I think everyone could sort of stand to relax a little bit about other people's dissent and maybe even bond with them over protecting their rights to dissent. And I think that that's an important element of American unity, because American unity has always been built around liberty, not around agreement. And that's a very key part of the American idea. Build your unity around liberty. And I would say that that's a good start in a very divided country.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just am more spoiling for the fight than you are. That's all right.
well, I'll fight you over liberty. Okay.
David
that's
French.
What we can fight about.
David French, writer at National Review, constitutional lawyer, best-selling author, and a veteran of Operation Rocky Freedom, served our country. His latest piece, you want to check out more of the details, at nationalreview.com, Conservatives Fail the NFL's Free Speech Test. David, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity. This afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5, on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Harry Truman said, nothing new in this world, just the history you don't know. Interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal by Lee Edwards, who is a fellow at the Heritage Foundation now. He was the director of information for Barry Goldwater's 1964 presidential campaign, and he recounts in this piece in the Journal how LBJ used the machinery of the state, FBI, CIA, to wiretap and otherwise spy on the Goldwater campaign in 64 illegally. Confirmed by former CIA Director William Colby and others, the FBI arranged for widespread wiretapping of the Goldwater campaign. Campaign reporters could soon be heard asking specific questions about, for example, the candidate's travel plans that had only been discussed by Goldwater aides behind closed doors. So I guess some 50 years later, this is version 2.0 of that, or at least it could be. Spygate, as President Trump is calling it. We had the revelation over the weekend of Stefan Halper being embedded in the Trump campaign and striking up a relationship, friendship with Carter Page, communicating with Sam Clovis, national co-campaign director for the Trump campaign, as well as George Papadopoulos. And then early in the week, you had Michael Caputo, who's testified before Congress before, eviscerated the Mueller investigation for negatively impacting his life, you know, on the borderline of bankrupting, I think is what he was suggesting. And he was on with Laura Ingraham and said that Stefan Halper, that's not the only shoe to drop.
In Russia, they call this the Siloviki, the national security leadership that secretly spies on the entire citizenry of Russia. And here we are in the United States with our own Siloviki underneath President Obama. Let me tell you something that I know for a fact. This informant, this person that they tried to plant into the campaign and even into the administration, if you believe Axios, he's not the only person that came at the campaign. And the FBI is not the only Obama agency that came at the campaign. I know because they came at me. And I'm looking for clearance from my attorney to reveal this to the public. This is just the beginning. And I'll tell you, when we finally find out the truth about this, Director Clapper and the rest of them are going to be wearing some orange suits.
Well, that would be a banner day if that does come to pass. And now we're pleased to be joined by Michael Caputo, Republican strategist and media consultant, former Trump campaign advisor. I assume he's gotten cleared by his attorney, and he's going to tell us the agency and the name today. Michael, thanks for joining us. Appreciate
it.
Good. Thank you. Where does that stand with what you're able to talk about with respect to your experience on the campaign in the context of Spygate?
Well, in fact, I was approached twice by two different people in two different states, actually, completely unrelated to each other. The first one was the one in early May that I discussed on television this week, which was a national security government contractor contacted me through an intermediary, an old friend of mine, and said that the National Security Agency had Hillary Clinton-related emails that we might be able to get them for the campaign and was offering to give us a hand. You know, I talked through the intermediary with this gentleman for about 2 weeks, maybe a little less, and at the end, because I'm a veteran of the United States Army, I had a security clearance back in those days. I went through all the briefings. I knew that if any of this material was classified, that I would be in real legal trouble. So I took a pass on it. I told him to go through the regular whistleblower process and that the world would be interested, just not through me. And then this national security, a former national security government contractor, just dropped out of sight, didn't contact us anymore. That bothered me for 2 years. For 2 years, I scratched my head. And the intermediary, a very dear friend of mine, you know, we would meet for dinner when I visited Washington. And, of course, it would come up during dinner, and he was scratching his head. We could never figure it out. And then, of course, in October of 2016, we had the dump from WikiLeaks. When we were told that these emails were being held by the NSA, this former contractor said that he had seen two documents that he believed were emails. One of them was discussing how the Swedish government and a Swedish company had given $26 million to the Clinton Foundation in exchange for a waiver to deal with Iran around the sanctions. That company got that waiver. Now, that story had been reported a little bit by conservative media in 2015. But lo and behold, when the WikiLeaks dump came at the end of October, the big October surprise, within those emails was one or a series starring Hillary Clinton's campaign manager talking about how the Swedish situation was very worrisome. Now, that, of course, set up a red flag for me and my friend, the intermediary. It kept bothering us for a long time. 2 years, we didn't know what to think. And then, of course, this weekend, what happens, you know, it's revealed that Stefan Halper, who was paid by the Department of Defense, a former CIA operative, was working as an FBI informant tracking these members of the campaign policy committee. So immediately I knew, because, you know, I had revealed this approach to the House Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and the Mueller investigation, and I had given all of them the telephone number of my friend, the intermediary, to give them an opportunity to figure this out. And they never called him. They didn't seem interested. In fact, when I spoke to the Mueller team, they didn't even take notes. I offered them a copy of the overview that I had read to them, the timeline I had read to them. They didn't want it. So I just thought it was important to bring it up. I believe that government contractor could be involved in some of this spying. And I think the Department of Justice Inspector General should sort that out. The president very wisely over the weekend demanded that the Inspector General of the DOJ expand his investigation into things that the Obama administration had done to include these approaches to the campaign. Once he did that, I felt free to talk about it, and my attorney is contacting the Department of Justice Inspector General and requesting an opportunity for me to come in and tell them exactly what happened.
Then why are top Democrats, some who saw some of this evidence yesterday, claiming that there is no evidence of spying in Trump's campaign? I mean, you had Adam Schiff up there. Paul Ryan was reserved and said that's classified information. I'm not giving you an answer, but are they seeing something that's not there?
Well, I mean, Adam Schiff has a tell if you watch him. You know when he's lying.
Yes, his mouth is moving. Yes, right. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. He's an inveterate liar, and he does it with impunity because he has the protections of a Congress. He's allowed to say whatever he wants from the halls of Congress. So he's a liar. It's been proven. Okay. And I'll tell you, what's really interesting to me is that in the 1970s, the Democrats were up in arms about very similar misbehavior by the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, spying on the American people. And they put together the Church Committee, if you remember that, Frank Church, a Senate Select Committee to examine this, which resulted in over 100 members of the FBI, the NSA, and especially the CIA were let go, fired. And for decades, new people would come into the CIA and the old grizzled veterans would say, hey, whatever you do, don't break the law because that's going to happen to you. You'll get fired. Now the Democrats who were cheering that on back in the late 70s and continue to look at the Church Committee as heroic work are confused by why we would want a similar examination of Obama's FBI, NSA, and other national security organizations.
I want to go back to something that you said, though. These names that you said contacted you, the people that you said contacted you, that you were suspicious of, you turn these names over to House and Senate, the relevant House and Senate committees before which you've testified, to the Mueller team, and nobody was ever followed up with. Is it your supposition that they were not followed up with because they're sort of known assets of law enforcement that were embedded in Trump's campaign?
Frankly, the first time I turned it over to the House Intelligence Committee was, I think, early this year. And, of course, I every time I called my buddy, the intermediary, he said, nope, haven't heard from him. And then the same thing happened at the Senate and the Mueller Committee early this month, the 1st and 2nd of May. No call to the intermediary. And I was just like, maybe they think it's kooky. Maybe they'll get around to it. Maybe they're just terrible investigators. Maybe their phones are broken. I couldn't figure it out. And then when the Stephen Halper thing came to light, I thought, well, here's what it might be. Yep. And I thought it was my duty as an American citizen and a supporter of the President of the United States to make this known.
How do you know that the two individuals you're referring to were with specific law enforcement or intelligence agencies?
The intermediary is somebody I've known for many years. He later joined the Trump campaign. He was only approached because he was a friend of mine. And then the former government contractor knew that he could get to me through him. So I don't consider him to be the least bit culpable for any of this. But the primary, the government contractor, you know, I didn't know what he was. I couldn't figure it out. And we were actually reaching out to him earlier this year to try to, you know, poke at it a little more, and he didn't get back to us. And I just kind of dropped it and gave it to the committees because that's their job. So, you know, this could be a big misunderstanding, but it could also be the keys to the kingdom of God. Somewhere in between is probably the answer. And it's the responsibility of the Inspector General to figure that out.
During your time on the Trump campaign, was there any discussions among senior staff and advisors about the possibility that the campaign was being surveilled?
You know, we used to talk about it a bit. that our phones were being bugged. It was kind of idle chatter. We were warned, not officially, but by senior officials, that it might happen, or that might have happened. We didn't sweep the place or anything like that. But you know, you hear that kind of chatter on a presidential campaign. I didn't pay it in mind. But I'll tell you, it sure looked like that chatter was pretty prescient.
He is Michael Caputo, Republican political strategist and media consultant, former Trump campaign advisor. Michael, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Just remembering Chris Cuomo on a very special Dan and Amy. He's moving from the morning to the night.
Yeah, he's making the move to primetime to go up against, you know, Rachel Maddow and Fox's Sean Hannity. It's CNN's 9 p.m. slot. So he's only been on New Day for 3.5 years, but you'd think he spent his whole life there. Listen, his family was brought on, his two darling children.
A farewell show.
Yeah, and Allison, they were saying goodbye.
I got to say a couple things, then we'll go. One, you know, you were a gift here. Everything changed when you came. So
I love you. Allison. I love you so much.
You guys let me do my job.
This is his kid.
And you're the reason I do it. And you made me.
He does it for the kids.
So
you made me a better man.
I won't be there at night. Homework will be easier for you now. Because mommy's going to be the one telling you to read, telling you you're wrong about not having homework. And the big one doesn't even come. The 15-year-old. That's having a teenager.
That's right.
The show is a gift. The crew is amazing. The show will continue to get better. I know this for a fact. And I have a heavy heart about leaving, but my mind is clear.
So emotional. And then, if I don't come back from the evening show, just remember I love you kids.
And they changed the open.
This is New Day without Chris Cuomo.
Oh, they're so funny over there. But then they threw it to Poppy Harwell or Poppy Fields. And she had a comment.
A bittersweet, emotional day. And Chris, to you, as much as I want to make jokes, I think my message to you is you made us all better journalists from day one. But for me, you made me a better parent. And you were the one that always told me before I had our two children, it's all about the kids. Yep. It's all about the family. That's number one. So thank you for that.
I had no idea until you told me my kids was, it was all about my kids for me. I had no idea.
Oh, my gosh.
Ah, boy. You complete me, Chris. You complete me.
I heart you.
I hope I get that kind of send off when I replace Art Bell.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.